I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hello and welcome again to Brokenomics. Now, in this episode, I thought we'd have a look at the remaining manifestos of note, that being of Labour and Reform. Last week, of course, you watched me being absolutely tortured by myself, reading the Conservative and Liberal Democrat manifestos. Now, that was a week ago. I've already forgotten what was in the Liberal Democrat manifesto. I think it was probably a whole load of 600 pages of eco-twattery. The Conservative one, in reflection, I should have given a summing up at the time, but the Conservative one, it was just managed to climb, wasn't it? I mean, there was no energy in it whatsoever. It was defensive. It was, okay, you know, everything is falling apart and we vaguely recognise that some of these things are falling apart and we're going to put a sticking plaster over it and not actually do anything about the underlying problems. So, I mean, it was just a woeful, weak, managerialist, let's smooth out the decline, no energy, awful manifesto. So it was absolute bloody torture. But, I mean, they won't be winning anyway. Got some more fun ones today, because Labour are almost certainly going to win this election. So we need to find out what's in their manifesto. And, of course, Reform. Reform are gunning for the opposition. They probably won't get it this election. But their manifesto, I'm hoping, when we have a look at it, is going to it's going to move the window, I would hope. It will start to shift us in the right direction. So let's dig into those. And I'm on the podcast after this to give my reactions on the Reform manifesto. So you may have seen some of my thoughts already, but that's in the future for me, in the past for you, and you know, stuff. Right, so the Labour Party manifesto. Let's have a look at their top pledges, shall we? All adults to receive a genuine minimum wage, no matter your age. Yeah, we covered minimum wage last week in the Lib Dem manifesto, and in fact also the Tory one, because they're in favour of it now. A minimum wage does not mean you get paid more. A minimum wage means it is illegal to have a job if your labour isn't worth over a certain threshold. And all it does is it drives automation or offshoring for stuff, or faster adoption of AI, or whatever it is. So I don't even know what a genuine minimum wage is. I mean, presumably that is a higher one. But that is not going to create any jobs. That's just going to speed up, like I say, automation or offshoring. So that's a bad idea. Right. Increase NHS appointments by 40,000 per week, funded by cracking down on tax avoidance. Jesus. Right. OK. An extra 40,000 appointments per week in the scale of the NHS isn't actually that high. I don't have a figure for what the total amount of appointments in the NHS is, but it's a number that looks big that isn't proportionally that big. But in terms of cracking down on tax avoidance, can I just point out that tax avoidance is legal? It's tax evasion which is illegal, but tax avoidance is just you avoid paying tax that you don't need to, which basically everybody should be doing, including Labour MPs. So, I mean, the definition is, of course, because tax avoidance is legal, but you're just not choosing to arrange your affairs in a way that means that you end up paying the maximum possible amount of tax that you conceivably could. What even qualifies on that? So I do like 2 or 3 days a week here, and I don't work the rest of the week. So am I avoiding tax by not working those extra days? I have a lot of money in an ISA, which is a tax wrapper, maybe equivalent to your 401ks if you're in America. Is that tax avoidance? People putting money in pensions, is that tax avoidance? There's a whole bunch of things that could come under that. So that is just a vague, woolly, nothing. Okay. Create a new border security command to tackle criminal boat gangs using counter-terrorism prevention laws. Now that actually, I believe the Labour Party might do. The reason being is I remember the last Labour government, and they used terrorism legislation for pretty much everything, including, in some cases, if you took the wrong bins out on the wrong day, they would use counter-terrorism legislation to crack down on you. So I actually believe that they will start using these powers willy-nilly for things that they were not originally intended for. So I believe that one. No increase in national insurance, income tax rates or VAT. Yes, again, another one that I believe. This is the whole Blair playbook of when he came in 1997. For the first, it was either the first 2 years or the first parliament, they kept the Tory tax levels and total spending commitments. Now, because the economy had been trending in the right direction, because those were back in the days when we actually had a Tory party that believed in conservative things, the first term of the Labour government in 1997 was probably the best this country has ever had it. Unironically, it was good. The proportion of the state as a share of GDP fell to its lowest level. The tax burden was quite manageable. Deficits were minimal. There was a deficit, but it was... No, actually, the deficit was virtually nothing at that time. There was a bit of debt, but again, it was perfectly manageable. So, again, I believe them on this one, but they will keep it the same. And the reason they do that is because Labour have historically got a very poor track record when it comes to tax and spend. As you saw these in the later stages of the last Labour government. By the time we got into Gordon Brown being the Prime Minister, I mean, tax and spend was way up. But I actually believe that they will keep the tax levels where they are to begin with. But of course, they're planning on multiple years in government. And cap corporation tax at 25% throughout the parliament. Actually, it should be lower. It should be lower than at least Ireland on 12.5%, so we get that inward investment. But okay, at least they're not going to raise it. Launch Great British Energy with a windfall tax on oil and gas giants. Oh, God. Okay, this is stupid. So the reason this is stupid is because the oil and gas companies basically work on the commodity cycle, where over a 10-year period, at some point they're losing money, at some point they're raking it in. And you have to sort of look at it over the whole commodity cycle to assess where they are. And what happens is every time they are in an upswing, most recently because we did silly things with Russia by cutting them out of the energy markets, or at least we're cutting them out of our energy markets, which we didn't. Actually, we just let the Indians buy it off them and then sell it to us at a markup. But anyway, so the energy prices got out of hand. As a result of that, because of the price of energy went up, the energy companies looked like they were doing very well, and Labour started talking about a windfall tax on them. You can't look at it in any isolated year, because you need to take into account there is that lull in the middle. And also, the other reason why the energy companies are doing well is because they're not reinvesting into new exploration and new site production. So it used to be the case that the energy companies would spend a large proportion of their profits discovering and prepping new sites to bring online. Western governments in recent years have said to them, stop doing that because we're going to run down the production of fossil fuels. So they've basically been told that there's nothing that you can do with the profits that you'll generate. You can't reinvest them for the future. You have to either pay them out in dividends or share buybacks. So again, it's giving this elevated look of what the profitability in the sector actually is. And it's not realistic to just cut them out over the phase that they've been talking about cutting them out on. So that one is a bit silly. Right, crack down on antisocial behaviour with more police and youth hubs. Okay. I don't particularly mind more police, but the problem we got with police is they're all graduates now. It used to be the case where a lot of people coming out of the military would then go into the police, and the Conservatives, who are not conservative in the slightest and must be destroyed zero seats, decided to get rid of the army personnel coming in and instead just have a bunch of washy-wishy graduates. And they don't know anything, and they've been indoctrinated into left-wing thought, and they're awful. So I don't mind in principle more police as long as they're not a bunch of these wet graduates. And youth hubs, yeah, isn't going to make any difference. The problem is we have a different mix of young people in our cities, and the new Britons like to stab people, which is probably all I can say on that one. Right, hire 6,500 new teachers by ending tax breaks for private schools. You should get a tax. You should get more tax breaks for sending your kids to private schools because it alleviates the burden on state schools. Why can't you just take what the government would have spent on a state education and get that off your tax bill if you're going to a state school? And in fact, they're doing it the other way around. So all it will mean is at the margin, more people will not do, because 20%, VAT is 20%. So it's a significant, I mean, and you might have school fees of like 30 grand a year. So you add 20% onto that. You're going to get a lot of people who are like, okay, no, we can't afford this anymore. Especially with the debasement that we've experienced as well. So you're just going to get people moving over to the state system and greater burden there. So you'll need to hire those teachers anyway, and you'll get a net sum result. So yeah, that is a bit silly. Voting age of 16 for all elections. This is on the assumption that young people vote left wing. And as we covered last time, if we're going to be doing stupid stuff like national service, or we have a global elite who is desperate to get us into war with Ukraine, then actually there's a good argument that everybody should have the vote. I mean, why not 12-year-olds? Because if we get into a world war, it's going to affect them. Of course, in isolation, votes for 16-year-olds is silly because 16-year-olds don't know anything, as we covered last time. But it might not go the way that they think it's going to go, because it didn't with Germany, the German elections recently, the Euro elections there, they a lot of the younger people voted for the more what they would consider far right. So, anyway, that's in the manifesto. Right, introduce free breakfast clubs into every primary school. Okay, so breakfast clubs are where basically you can drop your kids off at school like an hour or two early so that you can then go off to work. That's not the direction we want to be going in. I mean, and so free breakfast clubs, so school budgets are incredibly tight, and often the only way they can make the budgets add up is with their after-school activities. So if you make them free, you're cutting off a revenue source for the schools. And also, if you make them free, a lot more people are going to attend them, and therefore you're going to have a lot more staff in because you've got ratio requirements, especially with primary school children. So what you're doing there is you're depriving primary schools of revenue, and the marginal bit of revenue that can make the difference because their budgets are very tight, and you're pushing up their wage bill substantially. So that is going to mean, well, that's going to be an unfunded promise then, isn't it? Because that's going to need extra money. Right. Remove hereditary peers' voting rights and set a mandatory retirement age of 80 in the House of Lords. Well, the hereditary peers, I mean, there's not many of them left in the chamber anymore anyway, and the ones that are left are genuinely quite sensible in most cases. And in fact, far more than the average member of the House of Commons. So if anything, it should be the other way around. Get rid of the House of Commons and just keep the hereditary lords. I mean, I think I'd rather that. But anyway, so they're the top promises. All right, now let's whiz through the rest of it, shall we? Security and defence, absolute commitment to the UK's nuclear deterrent. Fair enough. Apply a NATO test to major defence programmes. I don't know what a NATO test means in this context, but I can tell you what NATO is. A lot of people think it's a security alliance. Really, it's more of a buyer's club. So when you join NATO, you have to basically standardise your gear to NATO standard, which means you have to buy all new rifles, ammunition, a whole bunch of things need to be brought onto the NATO standard. So part of the reason why NATO has expanded so much is because of the lobbying effect of the defence contractors who supply the NATO gear. And whenever a new country comes in, they then have to start spending billions on this buyers club to get their gear compatible to the NATO standard. So an expansion of NATO is absolutely not what we should be talking about, and a NATO test to major defence programmes. Yeah, again, that's just meaning that we're channeling more money to a handful of defence contractors who will then lobby for that. So, no, not a fan of that. What else have they got? Create a new border security command funded with the Rwanda funding. Well, the Rwanda funding is absolute... I know that's a Tory thing, but it's bollocks. So, what is it? We spent $300 million on it, and we sent two volunteers out. And they got paid to go. So the Rwanda scheme is just a complete dud. Whether you could create a new border security force for that, whether you could reclaim that $300 million, I don't know. But don't hate that one, actually. Right, secure a new security arrangement with the EU for real-time intelligence access. What's the motivation here? Is it for terrorism? Is it for all of the new Europeans who are coming in from places that end in Starn and now want to run around chopping our heads off and stabbing us? Is that what it's about? Or is it about going after people who disagree with the EU leaders politically, people like us? Because it's probably both, isn't it? So, yeah, no suspicions of that one. Right. Establish a new returns and enforcement unit with 1,000 additional staff. Returns and enforcement. So is this remigration? Okay, well, I like that then. Needs more than 1,000 staff. I mean, we should get the whole British Army working on that. So, no, don't hate that one either. Right. Economic policy. The first line is move the current budget into balance. Right. So we're spending about 1.2 trillion at the moment. What's that in billions? It's 1,230 is about what we're spending at the moment. And we're collecting about 1.14. So there's a gap of about 90. 90 billion is roughly the deficit that we're on at the moment. So they're going to move to a balanced budget, aren't they? With a deficit of 90 billion. How are they going to do that? Well, I mean, let's just look at it like this. NHS, biggest line item, about 180 billion. Are you going to cut that by 80 billion? No, I don't think you are. Education, education's 80 billion, so you could cut that out. What else is there? Defence, relatively small, it's like 30 billion, so it's probably not going to come down to that. Pensions are 140 billion, so... Do you want to get rid of a bit over half of that? Probably not. I don't think that's what they're advocating. Universal credit, that's about 90 billion. So there you go. You could get rid of universal credit. That's one. Or all other welfare is another 90 billion. So you could get rid of half of the... Get rid of all of the disability stuff and all of that stuff. You could just get rid of that. Or universal credit. And either would get you there. Or, like I say, education, and then everything else. I mean, those are the big line items. So if you're going to move the budget by 90 billion, those are the things you need to go after. I don't think they're going to do any of that. So how are they going to, as they say, move the budget into balance? Well, yeah, but you're not, are you? You're not. You're going to put spending up. I bet you are. So no, don't believe them. Don't believe them at all. Second point, insured debt is falling. Yeah, not a chance, not under a Labour government. Debt is not going to fall. And also, as we talk about on Brokenomics a number of times, we have a expansionary debt-based fiat money system, which cannot tolerate a shrinking money supply, and the primary factor of that is debt. So no, that is just no. Right. Retain the 2% inflation target. On paper, yeah, maybe. Actual inflation is going to be well above that. I mean, we might get interim periods of a low inflation print, but the whole name of the game, if you remember my Brokenomics on liquidity, the whole name of the game at the moment is debasement. How can we debase the money supply as quickly as possible without causing a revolution? And in turn, shrink the real value of our debt. So no, you're not going to keep the inflation target. Well, you might keep the target, but you're not actually going to do it. Right, no increase in national insurance, income tax rates or VAT. Yeah, we covered that above. Abolish non-dom status. Oh, they've got to be in their bonnet about this. No, you don't want to do that. So this is people who are quite wealthy and they are considered non-domicile. So they don't live here, or at least they live here for only a proportion of the year, and they spend most of their year somewhere else, but they spend a decent chunk of time here. They want to get rid of that in the thinking, and this is always Labour things. Labour always think if you just put up taxes, people will pay the taxes. They might do, but quite often they just say, okay, well, I won't come to the UK anymore, or I just come as much as a tourist does, maybe like 20 days a year or something. So yes, bit of a silly one there. Right, close the loophole on private equity capital gains tax. So I don't like capital gains tax because what it does is it causes capital to become static rather than move around to where the innovation is occurring, where the interesting things are happening, because people would rather hold on to a substandard investment rather than pay the tax on it. So if you didn't have capital gains tax, what would happen is much quicker when there was a better investment, a more innovative solution to something, then capital would flow to it rather than being stuck where it is. And private equity is a method of doing that. Now, I'm no fan of private equity, so I mean, fair enough. But again, they're taking the wrong approach on this. Right, modernise the HMRC and tackling tax avoidance. Well, as we talked about, tax avoidance is perfectly legal. Right, support businesses through a stable policy environment. Well, that actually has merit, yeah, because business does like to see that the rules aren't going to change all the time so they can plan for the future. So I like the idea, but I remember the last Labour government and they just brought in loads of stuff and they couldn't stop adding to the policy environment, and I can't see what's going to be any different this time. Right, establish a national wealth fund and promote a pro-business regulatory framework. What wealth? How are we going to have a bloody national wealth fund? We don't have any wealth. What are you going to put in it? What a load of nonsense. I don't even know what to say to this one. You can't have a national wealth fund if you don't have any wealth. We're running a deficit. So, yeah, don't be silly. Right. Invest in tech, ports, gigafactories, steel industry. Yep, liking this. Carbon capture and green hydrogen manufacturing. Yes. Okay, so let's deconstruct this one a bit. Investing in tech, well, that's not the job of the government, but you can set up a low tax corporate tax rate environment that makes people want to innovate here and reduce capital gains tax so that capital can be deployed here so that tech organically grows in this country. Give you an example, back in back after I retired, but and I was kind of knocking around, I ended up helping out my local universities on some tech some business advice for the tech companies that were coming out of the universities. And to a man, every time one of them got some serious traction, they just immediately pissed off to California because that's where all the capital is. And a more remarkable saying this, but a more friendly regulatory environment than we have here. So you need to tackle those issues if you want to encourage tech here. Ports, never say no to a bit of port infrastructure, but that port infrastructure will probably be used to ship in Chinese tat to here rather than us doing any manufacturing, because you're not addressing that. Gigafactories I like, big factories, they basically just mean, but how are we going to incentivize people to base their manufacturing here? I would have done that for the corporation tax thing. Steel industry, I can't see that because steel and chemicals require vast amounts of energy. So they're highly dependent on cheap energy. And this is why Germany was predominant in manufacturing in steel for the last 30 odd years, because they had access to very cheap Russian energy. In fact, even before things like Nord Stream, they had old Soviet era pipelines supplying gas into Berlin and places like that. That meant they had access to cheap energy, and therefore they could do things like steel and chemicals. Now the Green Party have come along, the Nord Stream pipeline bombing has come along, and Germany is now incredibly suffering in this. How are we in the UK, with our high price of energy, going to do steel when we've got a high energy cost and we are deliberately trying to increase energy costs for your net zero nonsense? So I just don't believe that's viable. And as for carbon capture and green hydrogen manufacturing, bollocks, not touching that, right. Undertake a review of the pension landscape and do what? Yeah, pensions are unaffordable. Demographics time bomb is in the process of blowing up at the moment. We can't afford it. So you're going to review it. Okay, fine, and then do what? No detail. I wonder if that's going to be a theme in this, because this is a very slim manifesto. Which is an interesting point in itself, actually, because Labour clearly expect, like the rest of us, to win. So they could have gone the way of having a bumper manifesto to get a mandate for all of this stuff. And that is helpful, because then when you want to push something through, it's much easier to get it through the press, public opinion, and the House of Lords, and any other sort of jurisdictional challenges or judicial challenges that might come along if it's in the manifesto, because you can just say, look, I've got a mandate for it, I'm going to do it. They've gone the other way, and they've gone for what is clearly a very light manifesto. And I don't think that they are light on things that they want to do. They're just light on things they want to tell us about. And that line is an example of it. They're going to undertake a review of the pension landscape and do what? What is it that you're going to do? I mean, if it was consistent with your point about tax avoidance, you would stop people putting money into ISAs and personal pensions. So is that what you mean? I don't know.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.